I spent some time talking about, you know, the fact that I could go and help people with capital. I remember I had a guy who actually reached out and he set up a Zoom and everything with me, and then he canceled it and he was like, oh, we got the deal funded. That was the reason for canceling the meeting. I was like, yeah, but what about next time?
Yeah, what about next time?
How do you differentiate between good and bad deals?
I want to see what their background looks like. You know, I do a deep dive into their background and see if they have a bunch of lawsuits, bankruptcy.
What would you say are some do's and don'ts of connecting?
I would say do.
Welcome to Nursing Real Wealth. Today we're joined by Brandon Doering, a skilled trades expert, business manager, and small business owner. Brandon owned an archery shop for 14 years and now works full-time for the Department of State. In 2023, he successfully completed 15 real estate deals as both a private money lender and a connector. And is now focusing on acquisitions in 2024 with private money lending as a side business. Brandon, welcome to the show, man.
Thank you, man. I'm completely humbled and definitely looking forward to this. This is an opportunity that I didn't expect, and I watch all your stuff, and I love it, man. You do a great job at these, and you've had some really good people on with some really good info that is very beneficial to, you know, the community that we're in, and just spreading the wealth of knowledge.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, I as far as knowledge goes, I have definitely a solid abundance mindset on that one. I love going yes. and giving out free content. You know, it's never going to be 100% of what you need to know, but at the end of the day, it's going to get you hopefully started off on the right foot. And yep. there's nothing better. You know, I was just talking with somebody, and I've had a couple of people over the course of this, more than a couple of people, I've had a number of people reach out and talk about, give me feedback on podcast episodes, and particularly my episodes on private money lending, mm-hmm. and talk about how the episode, you know, on red flags or whatever saved them, you know, $50,000. And, you know, that's enough to keep things rolling as well, just to go and yes. get that feedback and be like, dang, all right, that's cool. So, you know, something that came up, a guest that I had on or whatever, shared one nugget that kept you from losing $50,000.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we do it.
Solid. Yeah, it really is. We're all in this. It's a learning process as well. You know, and everybody learns. People are all in different states, and they learn different things about those states, and they share those things. And it's an amazing thing when you're like, oh man, that is gold. I needed that. Like, and I find that quite often listening, and it's worth people's time to sit down and listen to a podcast, or you know, I do it on my way to work or on my way home to work if I'm not on the phone. And I'll listen to your podcast. There's a few others, you know, that we're diving into, just to soak up even a couple little things. You know, I like to cut out all the, you know, the other stuff, that the rambling, so to speak, but it's not on yours, but on some others.
It takes a little bit of work to try and make sure that it doesn't get too off track. But, yeah. you know, the other thing too, I love this. I don't know about you, but I love listening to podcasts at like 1.5 to 1.75 times mm-hmm. speed. I feel like my retention is even better because I'm a slow talker. I'm not going to lie. I'm a slow talker. So I don't take any offense, folks. If you play my podcast at 1.5 times speed or even 2.5, if you can understand me at that fast. But yeah, I highly recommend it. You know, you cram a lot of information in a very short period of time.
Your time is used a little bit more wisely, you know, mm-hmm. you know, it's so you can get a lot more things in. Yeah, no, that's the way to do it.
Yep. Awesome. Well, let's dive right in, man.
Let's do it.
You know, how has networking and building relationships contributed to your success in this real estate space, especially in the private money lending and connecting space?
Man, I've been at this. I started in March of 2023. And my first phone call was to Lance Riggin. And my second phone call was to Zoe Guzman. And And the first thing that Lance told me is you have to build out and build those relationships. And coming from a business background and customer relations, and then who I work with within the government, I understood that you really need to network in a way that you're not taking everything, you're learning as well. And Zoe was actually really prominent in that, you know, because he is, I mean, a huge giver in Pace's community. So I just kind of sat in the background for a little bit and just looked at who was doing what, how they were giving. And then I just started learning. And then I started reaching out. Like, I didn't post on everybody's stuff. I just immediately inboxed them and said, hey, 10 minutes of your time. I don't want to take up a half hour. I don't want to take up an hour. Give me 10 minutes of your time. Let me introduce myself and let's talk. Like, I don't want to take up all your time, but when I have value to give, then let's talk. Like, I want to learn everything. And I started that off like literally the first day as I was going through Gator. So you can't put a price tag on good, valuable, friendships. I like to look at them more as friendships. Everybody that I work with, including yourself on stuff, like, I consider everybody more of a friend, than a business partner or, you know, a private money lender or whatever. Like, I consider everybody that I work with a friend, you know, and that's how it's been. So.
That's great, man. Yeah.
Yeah.
Lance was not quite my first phone call, but that would have been a great first phone call for sure. You know, he talks about networking with intention, and I think that's really, really, really excellent. I actually didn't start networking. I didn't know how to, you know, like meaningfully reach out to people. I also struggled. I'm not going to lie. I struggled with, I don't have anything to offer them. Mm. Right? This is a multimillionaire. You know, like, you know, you might meet somebody in the group. You're like, they're obviously, you know, they're affluent. They've got a lot of money and, mm-hmm. you know, they've done well. What yeah. do they need from a guy like me? And, you know, so in that regard, you know, what would be your advice to somebody who feels that way? They're listening right now and they feel that way. And they're like, I just don't feel like I've got anything to contribute to this person. I know I want to bring value first.
Yes. So here's how I look at it. And, everybody, I believe, has something to give, whether they know it or not, whether they're introverted or extroverted. I'm a very extroverted person, but like I work with like Brandon Jump, for instance. You know, he's kind of introverted in a lot of aspects, super go-giving guy, but like he brings a lot of stuff in the background, and then, you know, I'll work with like other people. More on the relationship side of things. So if that person is looking to network and they're just like, man, they're doing a lot of stuff. You don't know until you ask. You don't know until you send that out and be like, hey, I really don't have a lot to give that I think I don't have a lot to give, but here's what I can give. If you give me just a little bit of your time and guide me a little bit, I will come back to you and I will have it right. And that's kind of what I did. And it really, you know, it is intimidating. Like just getting into real estate and real estate investing, it's intimidating to talk with people that have done, you know, hundreds of deals and, you know, have tens of millions of dollars or whatever. It really, it is kind of intimidating. So this is a business of kind of getting out of your comfort zone. You have to at what your goals are and how you're going to achieve them. And you never know who that person is that you're going to meet that you are going to be able to assist and form a relationship. You know, there's some guys that I work with, Outlands. I put out one post about, I needed some larger funding, for a deal, with Stephanie Blackburn, actually. And I said, hey guys, I know some of you sit in the background and look, but somebody, you know, if you guys want to talk, I'm still new at this, but, I have this deal, and, Kevin Outland reached out to me and we struck up a conversation. Next thing you know, I'm talking to his brother and his son. We had a big meeting and I didn't have a lot to give other than I understood how to structure a deal at that time. And we set it up. We did deals. We're best friends now. We talk daily, if not every other day. We constantly have meetings and stuff, and we do a lot of stuff. And actually, they were just on with Pace here not too long ago. You know, they did $750,000 in PML. So that one relationship came from a conversation and getting on my comfort zone, because you know they do a lot of bigger stuff. And me, I started in this business with like $500. So, you know, you look at people who have a little bit more, you know, it's like, oh man, but you learn the basics and you come into things at a different angle than everybody else. But you make yourself personable and also learn, be humble enough to learn, you know, and not think you know it all, or that you come off as cocky or whatever, anything like that. Be susceptible to the people that have done this for a long time, have knowledge to give, and a lot of them want to, because you could be doing stuff together and both would be profitable. The saying of I would rather take a portion of a watermelon than a whole grape takes a lot of people in that watermelon. So, you know, so that's what I would say. You know, get out of your comfort zone a little bit. Send out that one message or two messages to people that you normally probably wouldn't. And just don't ask for a lot of their time. Just ask for 10 or 15 minutes. And you'll be surprised at who will do that. And almost literally everybody I've talked to has done that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I also think, too, you know, it's easy to look at, you know, take my background. I'm a nurse, right? So you look at your background as a nurse and you're like, I don't have any entrepreneurial, you know, background mm-hmm. whatsoever. You know, what could I give? And I think, you know, the other thing that you got to really think about is what kinds of skills did you gain mm-hmm. from that background that do apply, that are valuable? Great. You know,
your structure.
Nurse, one of my biggest skills is the observation of things that are probably not as they seem, right? So mm-hmm. I definitely have a skill for going and looking at stuff and saying, you know, in a nice way, I'm not sure this is exactly what it seems.
Yeah, I agree, man. I've talked to him on many occasions where, you know, you're very, you can definitely dig into the areas that like other people don't think about.
Yeah.
And you're very, very, receptive to that.
So, you know, that's just, you know, that's not necessarily an entrepreneurial skill per se,
right.
But it absolutely applies to this space. So just, you know, just leverage it forward.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. I never had a background in real estate. I knew I wanted to, and I just decided I was going to learn it. I've been wanting to learn it for 10 years, but I didn't want to really be an agent. And so I learned how to underwrite, and I learned how to bring good structured deals to people where it's not just like, you know, the normal 90 days, 15, 20% return. You know, my when we release stuff, there everything's there in a G drive, and you know, they have everything to in, and that brings value to people, especially the people who have the money that want to invest, and they can make a predetermined decision on those things. So adding value is also being very structured in how you bring things. So, you know, if I'm being honest, every person deserves to reach their goal. You know, every person that's gotten into this has a goal, and they deserve to, you know, put forth the effort and to work with good people and achieve those goals. You know, I love to give as much as I can when I can. You know, it's hard to balance work, life, business, and everything, but you know, I give where I can, and that's you know, a wonderful thing about our community. You know, everybody gives.
Yeah. You know, obviously, you know, there's the building of relationships and networking and stuff like that. But, you know, what are some things that you've done to go and make sure that you maintain really great lasting business friendships?
One of the things is, meeting up, you know, every time I go back to Michigan, you know, here to Michigan, I meet up with Outlands. Or we'll Brandon Jump and I'll meet up with a few people. Aaron Kim, we meet up with him, and we just have dinner and we talk about stuff. We have phone conversations that aren't totally structured around business it's just getting to know the person and talking about other things other than just business. And, you know, sometimes it's life stuff. It starts with the conversation and maintaining those conversations. Now, the caveat to that is it's really hard the farther along you get to talk to everybody all the time. And I didn't think that was going to be the case at first. And now it's come to the point where like I have 500 plus messages in my inbox and I don't know what to do because I only have so much time in a day and I feel so bad. And I'm like, I want to talk to everybody, but how? And when I first started out, I was getting on every 15 minutes, every waking hour, getting up super early, you know, and it was super late at night. And it's gotten to the point where you have to, you know, kind of build out your business too. But that would be a meet up with people, have casual conversations, talk about other things than just business. Sometimes people get tired of business and they want to talk about business. They want to talk about, sports, or, you know, I'm big in the outdoors and hunting and stuff. We talk about hunting and ride motorcycles, stuff like that, like strike up conversations, and just talk about other things. You know, when you grew up younger and you have your best friends or friends that you grew up with, you guys don't talk about that stuff. You talk about life. You talk about things, your kids, your family. And also that's how I would say to maintain those relationships as best as possible and just become friends.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's excellent. I think there's definitely something to be said, you know, especially for folks that are even looking for capital, right? I mean, Melissa Palmer's definitely hit on this, you know, shouldn't be getting DMs from a person who's a complete stranger looking for capital in the next few days. That's a weird way to go and have relationships with people.
It is.
You should be connecting and saying, hey, I'm looking to establish a great relationship with you.
Yes.
I know you do some connecting. Love to learn more about your business. Rather than texting, be like, hey, can you fund this deal? We're going to be closing next week.
Yep.
That's not
or in 2 days.
You know? Yeah, exactly. Yeah, 2 days. Yeah. That's even more common.
Yep.
But yeah, like if you're looking for capital, you should be networking with guys like Brandon, guys like me.
Yep.
Just reach out and start that friendship. But I don't typically want to go and like hear the question of like, hey, can you fund this deal tomorrow the first date?
I can't, you know, and that's like, I used to entertain that a little bit just because I wanted to see like every deal. Like I wanted to see every structured deal, but now it's like you're inboxing me and you're messaging me wanting capital from people that are my friends, and you're just coming at me, you know, saying like, I need this, like, can you do this? And then I'm like, well, let's have a conversation. You're like, sorry, I'll move on or whatever. It's like, hey, I'm approachable. Like, talk to me and let's jump on a call, a Zoom. I'll set something up. Even if it's 15 minutes, you know, let's do that. And then let's talk about it. I want to know who you are, you know, and the same with the friend requests. Do you get 100 friend requests a day?
Oh man. Yeah, I get friend requests with no messages, and it's like, I mean, like, I would love to be your friend, but I don't know who you are yet. Right. So like, shoot me a message, shoot me a DM. I'm happy to become your friend. I'd love to learn more about you, what you're doing. And, you know, I want to know where I can help you, but I have no idea how I can help you. If I just get a face and I like, hey, want to be friends?
Yeah.
I don't know if I want to be friends. I don't even know if this is your real profile.
Right.
It might be the spammer's profile.
Right.
When they stole your picture offline and now they're going to sell me crypto.
Right. You want to invest in my crypto.
Yeah.
I get that a lot.
It's Pace's crypto, so you should give me money. For sure. I spent some time talking about, you know, the fact that I could go and help people. I'd love to go and network with people in sub two with, you know, capital. And I had a ton of DMs and a lot of great networking that happened out of that, people going and connecting with me and stuff like that. And I remember I had a guy who actually reached out and he set up a Zoom and everything with me, and then he canceled it. And he was like, oh, we got the deal funded. That was the reason for canceling the meeting. I was like, Yeah, but what about next time?
Yeah, what about next time?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm still here.
Yeah.
I still have. Why would you cancel a meeting with money?
Yeah, it means they were just business minded versus relationship minded, and they
wanted the deal done. I mean, I'm okay with the fact that he canceled for now. Until he changes that, like, I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
With probably not somebody that you want to do a lot of
deals
with. Because we want to do deals with people we, you know, gotten a chance to get to know.
Yeah, 100%.
But anyway, there's that.
You figure it out as you go in this business, and then you know, farther along we get, and then you know, start working with the people you work with, and add in a few more as you go.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
cool. Well, let's dive into deals.
Let's do it.
I think we talk about this a lot, and I feel like you can't really talk about it too much because everybody has a different perspective. Mm. They have a different twist on I have found that I can find a good or a bad deal with X criteria, whatever that is, right? They just have this little nuanced spin. So how do you differentiate between good and bad deals? Now, are there any key indicators that you specifically look for to make sure that it's a really sound investment?
Well, the first thing I want to look at is if you have everything put together, and the part of that criteria is the first thing I want to see is it under contract? You know, a lot of these that come to me, they haven't even put them on contract. They just want to see if they can get money first. And it's like, you know, it's not. And I was talking with Eric Fuller actually a little while ago, and I was bringing him a deal that was coming under contract. I knew it was going to be signed. So I felt comfortable enough to approach him with the deal because of the fact that they were getting ready to sign it. Now, normally I would want to see that stuff signed and it's actually in process before we go talk, because otherwise what if it falls through? Then we just waste time. So that would be probably the first things, is everything put together. I don't really care about the percentage right off the bat versus I want to see the securities. I want, are all the securities, are they offering cross collateral? I think a lot of people get carried away with everything. It depends on the deal. If there's enough meat on it, I don't think you need cross collateral on everything. It's nice. But it doesn't have to be, you know, is the hard money lender, are they okay with having someone in second position? You know, that's probably everybody should ask, you know, because you could get yourself into a situation real quick if the hard money lender isn't okay with that, and then you're out. You know, I want to see experience, you know, I'm okay with looking at stuff from first time people. Everybody has to start somewhere. And, you know, if I can offer some guidance on things that helps them. You know, I'm not an expert. Just let's just put that out there. I'm not a lawyer, and I'm not an expert in this. But I'm trying to just build the knowledge of all this so I can help as many people as possible. And so, you know, if the people have that, I want to see what their background looks like. You know, I do a deep dive into their background and see if they have a bunch of lawsuits or if they've ever been in default, bankruptcy, if they have. I understand things happen. I do. But, if, you know, things that happen recently, you know, it does this business. It's a dirty, dirty business. Real estate investing can be. And you really want to be protected. You want to make sure everything's there. I want to, if things start checking out, then I want to start talking with the borrower. You know, let's chat. Let's build a relationship. That's you know, the thing. Let's build a relationship, because I don't want to do just one deal with that person. Like I want to be their person that comes to, and then some of them I want to invest in myself, you know, even with my own capital. I know Pace is big into using everybody else's money and all that kind of stuff, but I want my money to grow too. So, and a lot of deals I fund myself with other people, so that if my skin's in the game, then you know, they know it's, you know, it's solid. So, being that there's a lot of bad deals going around lately, when you and I have talked about this, it's so important to take your time, in this stuff, this rush stuff. I think when people start pushing back on that, it's going to allow the borrower or the connector. It's going to put them in a state of mind that I can't be bringing these type of deals. Like, I have gotten deals funded in a very short amount of time, and I hated it. I absolutely hated it because I didn't want to push people into that kind of stuff, and I don't like it myself. The deals were solid, but it come down to like, man, we got to get this done in like 3 days. Like, what? You know, it can happen, but we've decided we're not doing that anymore. But we got to set a precedence, you know, you need to set a precedence. So, for all the new people coming in, take your time, like learn the stuff, reach out to people, maybe get in on a deal that somebody's doing and just shadow if they'll let you. And a lot of people will, just to learn that, and then realize that everything takes 7 full days minimum, you know, something soon. But that's where I like it, you know, roughly right in there. It gives me time to go over it myself, make sure everything's kosher, and then start putting out. I want to know the address. Like, I want to do Google stuff on this. I mean, I want to know everything, you know. So red flags come out as you go, and an initial looking at it real quick will tell you, you know, you can real quick look at numbers, you know, if the house is after repair value is 200 grand and the purchase price is 100 and they're going to put 60 grand into it, that leaves 40 grand, but that doesn't include all your closing costs and your fees and anything extra. So you can really get yourself into trouble. So there needs to be, you know, your loan to value needs to be 70% or below. I mean, I funded some that were high 70s, maybe low 80s, but they brought in cross collateral. So it helped a lot with that. So yeah, take your time, go through, learn it, write it down, have a standard operating procedure of everything that you need to go down through, and then check it off one at a time.
Yeah.
I think one of the biggest things, you know, I always tell people this, you know, I think one of the biggest things, I was just on a call with somebody just before this, actually, and they were newer and trying to figure out, you know, what should I do to, you know, keep myself safe? And I, you know, obviously in a half hour call, I can't give you everything, mm-hmm. but I'm going to give you some of the bigger ones. One of the first ones is like looking at loan to value and recognizing that that's a term that gets conflated wrong sometimes. Mm-hmm. You know, people go and use loan to value. Oh, and they're really talking about loan to ARV.
Yeah.
And that is different. Loan to ARV and loan to present value is totally different metrics, you know? And yep. So, you know, you got to be really clear. Which one are we talking about? You know, like if it's a 70% mm-hmm. loan to value and it really means like loan to present value, great. That's a good margin.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
If it's a 70% loan to the ARV, depends.
I should have prefaced that, but you and I have talked like that's exactly where you need to be. The basically the as is present value.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. Yeah. So I think it's super duper duper important to make sure that you're really well defined on that. I see a lot of deals where they'll say LTV and it is the ARV that they're calculating yep. it off of, and that is erroneous.
Yep.
It's going to be way over leveraged, you know. So
yes.
Yeah.
And that's where you get into trouble, especially if things go over. And yeah. they do go over. Let's face it. Everything yeah. goes over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a reason why, you know, hard money lenders, you know, structure a lot of their deals the way that they do, mm-hmm. You know, in, you know, generally, not all, but generally most of them are going to loan, you know, their metric is a loan to value, not a loan to ARV.
Right.
You know, right. So, yeah. I mean, I work with a private money lender, in Texas, and he's like, I don't really care as much about the ARV. He's like, I really care about my loan to value. The ARV is like, it's like, it needs to be a good margin,
right,
for me to work with,
right?
But he's like, at the end of the day, that number is kind of fictional,
right?
Like, we're not sure
if something happens, and you need to, you know, you need to get yourself out of that situation. You need to fire sale that sucker.
Exactly.
You know, you need to be able to recoup your funds and then some for your time and your effort and exactly. your
Yeah, I love the way that Abraham Gray puts it. He's like, I'm not in the business of preserving my principal. I am in the business of making money.
Yes.
And so if my money was out for a couple of months, I'm going to make money off of it, even if the borrower screws up, right? Yep. I can't have my money out for 3 months and then just get back what I invested.
Right.
Like, that's great that you didn't lose money, but you lost money through lost time.
Right. And that's another, you know, another thing that goes into, like, don't put all your eggs in one basket as far as just private money lending. You know, you need to go into acquisitions and get those homes and get the depreciation. So we'll probably get into that but you know, don't focus. Yes, I shouldn't say that. Focus on one thing and get really good at it and then branch out. That's what we're doing. And that way you can diversify. And then, you know, if something does bad go or something bad happens, then you've got your other parts of your business are still fortified and still moving. So,
That's great. So I feel like we kind of touched on this, but I kind of had like a specific one that was more towards like underwriting. So maybe there's a few things we can kind of flush out here, but you know, what are some key aspects of underwriting and due diligence that you really, really focus on? I think we really kind of flushed out like looking at the borrower is really big.
Yep.
But yeah, are there some other things that, you know, are really key aspects in the underwriting process?
I think everybody needs to be aware of what estates. There's some states out there that are a little funky. and some of them, I know lenders that absolutely won't lend in whatsoever. In fact, I think 99% of my lenders, they won't lend in California. Excuse me. They won't lend in Illinois. They won't lend in New York. I think Delaware might be one, but I can't remember. It's just those states are not investor friendly and it's a hassle. Like, I haven't done any deals in those states. I've had them presented to me and some of them actually look pretty good, like really good, but my lender's like, absolutely not. Nope. Not whatsoever. So it really is hard. Cause I've had some dandies come through that I just couldn't do, to get them done. So, it would have been some large paydays for the lenders, but that you have to kind of put that aside. The dollar amount isn't always it. So, but yeah, you definitely got to check the states. I would say do your due diligence on the states, you know, look into the states and just do a quick, if they're investor friendly, you can spend a half hour and go through a state and go to their websites. And there's a lot of stuff on BiggerPockets too about states. If you just do a quick Google search on investor friendly states and or problems with these states for investors, stuff starts popping up, and then you can really get a good idea of if it's something that's going to be worth your time. And if it's put in one of the check marks to put in there, if something bad happens, we have to deal with the county and the state and all the stuff in it. It gets costly, you know, and it might take you years to evict somebody. So
yeah. One of the things that I tend to think about is too is like length of time for foreclosure. The average length of time to foreclose in a particular state, you know, Florida, believe it or not, red state, should be very investor friendly. It does actually take a fair amount of time to foreclose there.
Yes.
It'd be like 9+ months. So minimum you're going to be in 9 months.
Yeah.
Indiana, another red state, technically very investor friendly. Definitely have some friends that love investing there, but just duly noted, can take 9+ months to go and foreclose there.
Yes.
Atlanta Georgia can foreclose in about 2 months.
Yep. It's kind real quick.
Sweet spot to go and invest.
Yeah, it's Texas, real quick down there.
Same thing. You can go and invest, you know, and or foreclose in probably about 2 months. So as long as you got some great connections there with a foreclosure attorney,
yeah,
you're less likely to lose as much and bleed and hemorrhage money.
I don't even want to meet a foreclosure attorney.
I know, right?
Yeah. I don't even want to go there. It's going to happen eventually, but I don't want to mess with it.
I hear you. Hopefully not, but I'm sure it'll happen someday.
We'll have different stories probably another year or two.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, theoretically, though, if you go and position the loan at a great loan to value, the borrower would have to be an idiot to want to even let the property go, right?
Yeah.
The incentives are leveraged right.
Right.
When you have a property that's leveraged almost all of its equity, the incentives shift, right?
Yes.
The borrower is incentivized to go and let that property go to you. It's like, yeah, sure. Oh, you want a deed in lieu? Sure. Happy to go
have at it.
Exonerate myself from that foreclosure. I can do this all over again.
Yep.
Sure.
Yep. I'm in a deal right now with quite a few people that statement has come out on that. So it's the length of time has taken a long time. But that statement has come out about just, you can have it. So now it's just being patient, and cause they are doing their stuff to remedy it. And that's, you know, it's good. They've taken proactive stance on it, and I'm not going to get too deep in there cause we're waiting to get paid back. But that exact statement came out. But yeah, so hopefully that's in the next hopefully week or less, everybody should be getting paid back out on that, which I'll be like, yes, thank the Lord, please.
Yeah, so. Right, for sure. Well, let me talk a little bit about the process of being a connector. Now, one of the things you've done is you've actually positioned yourself at times as one of the lenders, which is putting yourself really in a great spot as a connector, because you're bringing your own skin to the game and stuff like that.
Yep.
What would you say are some do's and don'ts of connecting? Cause there's definitely a lot of people eyeballing that.
Yeah. I would say start off, your due diligence has to be 100%. Do stay with the length of time with the borrower and lender the whole time. That's kind of been a big thing lately. You and I've had conversations on it. It makes a lot of people uncomfortable. I think the connector role was thrown around really loosely. I didn't actually think that's what I wanted to do in the beginning. And I know Lance was doing it and being really good at it. It kind of fell into place. Don't talk disparagingly to either the borrowers and the lenders. You know, that's where the whole friendship and everything and having those business relationships, when things start to get heated or whatever, because you're unhappy or being in the middle, you are the middleman. You are the one facilitating things. And there has to be for one, there's got to be confidence in the deal. Cause if you're not confident, you know, why are you spreading it around to everybody else? And you should be 100% confident that you would fund the whole deal yourself, you know, and that's why a lot of times I'll fund it. You know, my buddy Brandon Jump will fund it. We'll come in on deals together with people, joint venture with them on it. We're confident in those deals. And it really says something to a borrower and lender. Even I put it in the JV, put it in your JV that the connector is going to be joint venturing with, and until the execution date of the end date of when everybody gets paid back. Yep. Until closing. So you have to, if you want to be a connector, you have to assume that role. If you don't, and you don't think you can do that because things get built up, or you're just wanting to like, man, I just want to make a few bucks. Cause it's good. It's really nice. Especially if you have good structured deals, it can be really nice, but you already have to, you have to stay with it. If you can't, I'm just be blunt, and that's how I am. Like, don't do it. Get out. Like there's a lot of really good connectors in the group. And they bring a lot of value. They put a lot of time and effort in there. Their integrity is high, and they put out really good products. They put out really good deals. And you know, you have to maintain those relationships on both sides, because you don't want the borrower flaking out, because the borrowers having the deal and the lender bringing the money to the deal should not be lopsided one way or the other. There has to be a mutual respect and a 50-50 agreement. You know, it shouldn't benefit one side or the other. And, you know, the borrower needs to respect the lender because they're bringing the money to fund their deal so they can make the money. And the lender has to respect the borrower enough so if things happen, and they do, they always do, that they have an understanding. You know, I've seen it where they've just like the first little thing comes off and they go off. And like they're like, this is not what I signed up for. It's like, hey, this is real estate. A pipe burst. And I'm not saying like, so I'm just using figurative speech, but like something happens. And, you know, but so those would be the do's and don'ts initially of being a connector. And do I think it's for everybody? No, I don't think it's for everybody. Absolutely not. For me, being that what I do in the government and stuff with, you know, working with people in higher statures overseas and different countries and whatnot, like you have to maintain those relationships. And I was like, I'm good at building relationships. I'm good at putting things together. I've owned businesses. I know how to do that. And I need a way to raise funds for myself, for my business so that I can cover my holding or my costs. And also I can start building up my business capital on the side without having to tap into anything else. And that's kind of was my motivation on that part, in the private money side of it and being a connector. And I really admired the people who did it, and they did it well, and how they structured things. And I realized the time and effort they have to put into this stuff, to actually start to finish. If you can't do it start to finish, then go a different way of real estate. I'm just being perfectly blunt. So,
who are some of the connectors that you've worked with where you want to name drop some people that, like, give them some love?
I plan on it because, I've worked with Stephanie quite a bit in the connecting role. Greg Crane, I've worked in some stuff. Not that we have gotten deals done on that side, but we've collabed on a lot of things. Brandon Jump, who now is basically my business partner, and stuff. Those would be the main ones. I haven't actually done anything with Lance, but he was my first phone call, and we've chatted and stuff throughout. And I always reference him because I admire him and his wife's team, 100%. They do a lot of work. Just look at the effort they put out on their stuff. Like, they're in everything. They go to all the meetups. Like, I personally can't go to all the meetups, and really do those relationships. I find strategic people and work with, like, Stephanie. She was the first deal that ever connected with, and we've maintained a relationship throughout. We talk, you know, every other week, sometimes every week on stuff, and, you know, I'd love to do a ton more deals with her. There's a few other new up and coming connectors. I shouldn't say up and coming connectors because they've done a massive amount of deals that I haven't. Amber McCollum. I haven't even talked to her yet, you know, but I've noticed her stuff. She's very good, very humble. And I love her approach on things. Maria, I can't remember her last name. Is it Bach? Maria Bach. I've noticed her stuff, and I have yet to connect with her. And that's where the whole thing comes in about time. And, you know, I try to do that, but yeah. So those are the people that I would suggest people reach out to. And just to preface, don't be disappointed if they can't, like, get you right away, but they do their best. You know, Zoe's a good one. That guy, I don't know how he does it. Like, he's not only doing business with us, you know, we're all partners now on some deals. We formed that business. You know, he's talking to everybody. If you notice, the first new person that comes in the group, he's the first one.
Always, always there, yeah.
One, and I'm like, dadgone it, man, because I try to welcome everybody.
I think he must have AI that tells him when a newbie.
I'm gonna ask him.
Yeah, like, right. Okay. Yeah.
So, and it could be because it drops a different emoji, GIF,
yeah, right.
GIF, yeah, whatever you want to call it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, all the time. And, you know, so those would be some good actual connectors, that I would, just look, do your homework and look like, you know, I haven't done nearly as many deals. I've done 15 deals, and you know, we slowed down the last 2 months to really work on acquisitions and some other stuff for security wise, which you and I talked about. We'll talk about a little bit. Just that goes back to don't be afraid. Like, these people are doing stuff, but they were once new as well. So,
yeah, many of them knew within the last, you know, couple of years, really, getting into this space. Yep. So, yeah. And have become really excellent at it. And I think each and every one of them, just word of wisdom to each and every one of them, would say, do your own diligence, even on their own deals, even after they've underwritten it.
Yeah.
You know, everybody has a slightly different threshold of, you know, risk tolerance and things like that. And so I think that's, you know, going to be the most important thing. And don't hesitate to ask them questions, you know, try to understand, you know, their the connector's perspective on how they underwrote it.
Right.
Right. Yeah, no, it's really important. You know, Abraham is like, you can do high risk deals, but you should just know that it is a high risk deal before you do it. Right. if that's what you want to do,
yeah.
I mean, I'm not going to stop you.
Right.
Yeah, you might make a ton of money. You might lose a ton of money.
You
can do that. You can do that. But you got to know whether or not it is a high risk deal.
You know?
Can't just assume that, oh, dang, this is going to be a great return.
But
there's a high chance of failure. Like, you got to be really aware of, you know, what the risks are with that specific deal.
Yeah. Right. Yep. It's definitely, that's the philosophy of having different parts of your business. Cause some parts of your business, you can throw out some really high risk stuff while your other parts of your business are, if you fail, it can catch you up. So.
Yeah. So let's dive into the kind of the next stage. You're looking at doing some acquisition. Yep. You're still doing a little bit of this connecting and lending thing, but you're shifting gears a little bit. So tell us a little bit about what you're doing.
So Brandon Jump, Zoe Guzman, and Fergie. I can't remember how it's. Yeah, Fergie. Everybody knows Fergie. We all partnered up. The whole thing with real estate is having the securities. Everybody wants the most securities. A lot of deals, you come in second position. You try to get as much securities as possible. And we just launched a business where everything stays in escrow. We're basically doing a cap raising for really large businesses that already have the credit lines established or going to have them. They just have to have the proof of funds in escrow. So your money will not leave escrow. It stays in escrow until the credit line is funded to the borrower and the business. And then you make your money back on that. It will be returned from escrow back to your business. And we realized a little while ago that that's where we wanted to go, almost like a syndication type, where you are putting money in for a certain return, and a lot of our deals will be 20 to 30% return. But that was prefaced from the borrower, that we didn't actually negotiate those. They're like, it's worth it to us, because a lot of these are tens of million of dollars businesses, and some of them are blow your mind. I mean, one of them that came across is $1 billion they'll be getting for one of theirs. So I won't disclose that one yet. So we're basically showing the proof of funds in escrow that they have it, and we'll be cap raising for that. So on that, which I talked with you earlier, the security is nothing leaves escrow. It never gets sent out to the borrower. It doesn't get sent out anywhere. And the only downside of that is if for some reason, and the finance company does not go through the full way, there's always a chance you will only get your principal back and maybe a very small percentage of, you know, all these borrowers put in their own money. They put in 10% into escrow as well. like the one we actually are starting with today. Today they funded it today. $1.5 million. They put in their 10. They put in 10% of that, which covers fees and stuff, and shows that they have skin in the game as well. And then we'll be cap raising $1.5 million for those for a 30% return, and it's 90 days. And then it has a hard cutoff at 120 with a, I think it's $333 a day late fee, from 90 to 120. At day 121, everything gets funded back, just regardless of if the financing has come through. But they're very confident. A lot of these deals have been going on for a year, 2 years. It's taken a long time. Development stuff. This is actually a 50-unit multifamily. So we realized that within Gator, the second position stuff, everybody has, we talked about the tolerance of risk and everything. And there's been a lot of bad deals. A lot of people are wrapped up in, like, there's some bad apples within Gator. And I'm blunt, they need to go. They got to go. These people, I'm not afraid to say it. Because, I pride myself on integrity. My whole business is built around integrity. The people I work with around integrity. And if you're a bad apple running people in the ground and playing off of them, then you need to go. So I don't want to be the negative Nancy on that, but enough's enough. but with second position stuff, if stuff goes wrong or the borrower flakes or something happens, you're out. You can take them to court. And you can hope and a lot of them have come back good, and you'll get your money on that. On this one, take part of your capital that you have, put it into your deals, first, second position, into those type, and then do with us where it's set in escrow. It stays there. Nothing moves. Nobody touches it but escrow. And then when things get financed, you'll get a really healthy return back, and then we can do it over and over and over again, because that's where we're heading with these. And, it's taken a long time. We've been building this up, and we've made the right connections. And as of just a little bit ago, we funded our LLC actually came through Secured Capital Group. We are moving. We are moving. And so we just realized the need that there needs to be a little bit more diversified stuff that is secure. And to have that level of, I can put some money in there for 90, 120 days max, right around in there. When we get into some of the bigger deals, they'll go longer because it takes more time, because it's larger amounts. Put some of that in there, and then do your other stuff with other borrowers, so that's kind of where we're going with the connecting part of things, where we're managing partners, and we're just trying to make it as safe as possible for everybody. And I think everybody should have that attitude when they're looking at deals, whether they're just, for themselves or whoever, to look at it as, and I'm messing with other people's money, and we need to make sure it's as secure as possible, because if it's your money, you want it to be secured. So that's how, that's where I'm not going to go and take, my sister's money and put it into a deal, or my dad's money, or somebody close to me, or my best friend's money, and put it into a deal that isn't secure. So, so that's our new venture actually launching today. So you heard it here first.
I love it.
Yeah.
Awesome. What kinds of dollar amounts are you trying to raise for these?
So right now we're going to be between the first, we have two coming up here. Actually, the one's active right now, $1.5 million in escrow, 90 days, $333 late on day 91, late fee, daily fee. And then everything's returned back at 120. They're all going to be right around that range. We have some coming down like 500, 600. We figured the amount of effort that we put into some of these other deals that are smaller, we're doing the same amount of work for this. So these are probably going to be happening weekly, or biweekly. We're going to get a ton. We're going to try to get these first two knocked out. Make sure that everything that our stuff is good. We've been literally in meetings solid the last month, over a month. So getting stuff finalized. So that's so it's going to be, and then it could go up to 30 mil roughly. So right around there. So we want to get some of these other ones, done and out of the way, make sure everything's good and buttoned up, and then it's off to the races. So
it's awesome.
So
What kinds of dollar amounts are you looking for from individuals? Are there minimum dollar amounts?
I think if we're going into like a million plus, I think we're going to try to structure things at like 50,000 plus to come in and joint venture your LLC, come in, through us, and you'll be going straight to escrow. With the larger ones, we're probably going to be looking for more, or maybe only a couple come in, investors. I'm actually working on that as we speak with some outside investors. They're outside of Gator, just to kind of, you know, with those large ones, cause it takes a lot to get up to those bigger amounts. And these people, you know, this is like lint out of their pocket, you know, to put it in there. And so we will have some that are probably in like the $500,000 range that, you know, we could bring people in that have, you know, 25, 30, 40 grand, you know, or something like that to bring in. Now, you know, with the caveat that if it doesn't go through, you know, the financing on that part, then your money return, your principal returns to you immediately with just a little bit to cover some fees. And that might not be on everyone, but that's what we're structuring, so that you get just a little bit to cover your wiring fees and, you know, a little bit of stuff. So, but that's one end of our business that we're going into here actively right now, as well as acquisitions. So
cool. Where are you looking to acquire property?
We are actively working in Michigan. We are working in Georgia, and we're going to be venturing into a couple other states. We're getting those down here pretty quick, and we're going to be doing fix and flips in Georgia. We have some really good connections there that we've been working with for a long time. And then I have a lot of really good connections in Michigan. It's my home state. And so I really wanted to come back and do some stuff there. I miss it. I miss going to Traverse City. I miss the water. I miss all that stuff. So, predominantly all Section 8 in Michigan. That's something that we've really been targeting, and it's not going to be like slumlord status Section 8. These are going to be really nice Section 8 houses, that people will admire and have some pride in, that come in. So, there's a big stigma about Section 8, but the more you dig into it, the more you realize that it, you know, a lot of these people are just looking for a home to get going, to get into an actual home. And a lot of them need help. And sure, there's the bad ones out there, but we're going to try to weed out, and we're going to make a really big dent of Section 8 in Michigan, a massive dent. So, and we got partners and a lot of the stuff that we're going down to try to get that going, locally in Michigan. So I'll be down in your neck of the woods there real quick. So
love it.
Pretty close to your neck of the woods.
I love it. You're going to have to text me. Let me know when you're around.
100%.
We'll meet up.
Finally. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Finally.
Good. All right. I want to move into a really important area, and Pace and I got a chance to talk a little bit about this.
I love that podcast.
Yeah, that was such a fun one to go through. Such a good content. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I want to talk about your faith. I know you're a believer. You're a Christian. I'm a Christian as well. And yes, our faith is not a backseat portion of our lives and our businesses. It's the central component. I know that about you, and I know that about me. It's really the deciding factor between making one decision and another often.
Yes.
And so, you know, how does your faith play a role in your real estate journey, and how do you integrate your convictions, your mm-hmm. beliefs into your business practices?
Yeah. So I'll go back just a little bit real briefly. I started an archery company long, long time ago. My whole business was built around bringing quality service with integrity and the best that you could possibly bring, and but doing so humbly and with an attitude of I'm not running this business to gain for money. I'm not the guy who needs millions and millions and millions of dollars. It's not me. You know, I want to give back. I want to give back to my church. I want to, we have a lot of programs that I want to help, with monetarily. I do want to take care of my family. I mean, that's part of this business, but, so when I first went down the road of real estate, it was a lot of prayer. It was because I knew I wanted to. There was always like a desire and a calling, and it was some, I just love the idea of being able to buy a house and fix it, make something broken new, you know, and give somebody else an opportunity to have pride in a place. And, or, that's why I like Section 8, you know, providing something for someone. I'm not going to look at myself as a landlord, or they call them slumlords or whatever. We're going to take pride in these houses and be able to help the people that need help. Yes, we'll make money off of it, but I don't need to make a lot of it. I plan on giving and giving a lot. I'm probably the least stingiest person you'll ever meet when it comes to that. So going back when I first started this business, like I was talking with my wife and I really, you know, wanted to integrate, the service before self motto, and really, my favorite verse is Isaiah 40:31. Those that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings as eagles. They shall run, not be weary, and they shall walk and not faint. And, I really just wanted to, help people, and also be a witness, in this, you know, the whole integrity part of it is just a very small portion of it. It's a very small portion. You know, when God calls us to be more, or to reach out and help your brother or sister, he doesn't mean that in hey, here's $5 or here's $10 or stuff like, in a way, like it's a lot more than that. It's witnessing them to them and to really, love your neighbor as yourself. And throughout this whole business, this whole venture, and I will shout it from the rooftops. Every person that I have met has been God has put them straight in my path. Every person, every phone call that I have had, or every person that I have worked with, I have gotten off the phone, and you can ask my wife this. I call it like, you ain't gonna believe who I just met, how we align. And it's not of my doing. None of this is my doing. And so, and I've really had to kind of, cause you get that you do, it's really hard in this business to not get the shiny object syndrome and the, you know, the flash and the money. It for some people that's their goal. They want to make a ton of money. They want to drive the fancy cars. They want to, you know, have the biggest house and stuff like that. That's fine, but there's more to life than that. And, and talking to my wife about things and how this business was going to be structured and how, I wanted to be able to fund, we have a huge adoption program at our church, that's 100% paid for by the church. And I wanted to be able to help that. And that's part of why I'm doing what I'm doing. We're getting ready to build a building, and you know, I can help with my hands, but there's other ways I can help with too. And, you know, I want to be able to take care of people. I want to be able to give back. One of the people that was influential in a lot of this stuff was my dad. And, in fact, he kind of helped me even starting off my original archery business. And I want to be able to give back to my mom and dad in that aspect too. Cause I live in Virginia now. I'm not up there all the time. I can't help with everything, and it hurts. It bothers me sometimes, but, you know, there's other ways. But going back to, you know, you and I have talked, we've had conversations, you know, you really need to think about in this business and how to give, not take, and to really look at your heart and your soul. And you know, it really has been a blessing. This whole thing has been a blessing. Being on your podcast, man, has been a blessing. I'm humbled and honored. So integrating every decision, you know, is through thoughtful prayer. It's really been, and it's also tested me in that area too, because I've never been exposed to millions of dollars and stuff and working with that. And sometimes you like, man, I could go out and buy this, and I could, you know, it really, and a lot of people do, you covet things. And you really, you know, and you kind of lose focus of why you started to begin with. And I've really had to be diligent about not doing that. You know, I'm not going to sit up here and preach on a pulpit, for everybody, but, everybody I've worked with, it has been put there, by God. And I 100% have faith in how the rest of this business is going to go and is going to bless a lot of people, through me. And, you know, that's one of the things that I can hope for in this venture without getting burned out. Let's just put it that way, because it's really easy to get burned out.
Absolutely. I think that's a conundrum that people view when people see somebody, you know, becoming wealthy or whatnot. And yeah, the wealthy tend to get lumped up into one particular bundle. And, you know, I love that, you know, for you and really so many of my other friends, ironically enough, as we pursue making more money, the money itself is really not the object.
Right.
And the financial, the wealth itself and all of the, maybe the, you know, the luxuries and things like that it could buy, they're mm-hmm. really not the objective for most of the folks that I know.
Right.
Most of us are in it for something very, very different. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really cool that it's attracted so many people that are actually pursuing something that transcends the futility right. of some stupid luxury, you know, piece yeah. of clothing or,
yeah.
you know, watch or whatever. I mean, I get it. A watch can be an investment, but it's also just kind right. of a status piece that,
yeah.
you know, it's kind of, you know, it's going to die like another watch will die. You know, it's not that important.
Right.
But
how much can you actually take with you when you go?
Pretty much nothing.
Nothing.
And not even your underwear.
Take all the money in the world and have everything, you know, and it doesn't mean anything in the end. Not at all. So you've probably found yourself, I have done this, like I'm looking at houses and stuff like, wow. Man, those are nice houses. You know, I look at stuff, especially up in Michigan, like go up to Traverse City or Charlevoix or, you know, Harbor Springs. And you're like, wow, I want that lake house. But I'd be totally fine with a tiny little box right on the water and be totally content. And I have battled with this being in this business, and it does test you about being content with things. And, you know, I have to put it as like everything that I'm doing right now, it's just, you just add more zeros onto it. And, you know, you have to look, it's like, how many more people can I help, you know, in the end of things, like, I want to take care of my family and I want to take care, you know, of my church and the needs of people. And ultimately that's my goal. And the people I work with the same way, Jumps the same way. I know Stephanie and them Outlands, they all have these, things that they're involved with that are bigger than just, you know, the regular person. So, and every person that I work with, you know, everybody's motives are different, but every person I've worked with has been absolutely amazing. And I hope to do so much with them, you know, over the years, and everybody coming in, all the new people, like just never know who's going to be on the end of the phone.
Yeah. I love this particular verse. It kind of harkens back to what you were saying about, you know, being able to help people who are in need, particularly, you know, your church is focused on being able to
adopt very freely without the issue of finance. And I love this verse. And James says, if a brother or sister is poorly clothed and lacking in daily food, and one of you says, go in peace, be warmed and filled, without giving them the things that they need for the body, then what good is that?
Yeah.
And I also think, you know, if you're not in a position where you could do that, right, and you are struggling financially as well, you know, that's painful to know that you want to do that for someone, but you don't have the financial means to even do that.
Right.
And so I think there's value in if, as long as your pursuits are aligned and with with right desires. Yes.
Yep. Then
having financial affluence gives you an opportunity to do this in an abundant fashion.
Abundance. Yeah. Abundant, being able to provide for other people and help them and not think twice about it. You know, and honestly, that's how we should be anyway, whether you have funds or not. Like it's something that should be ingrained, like help a brother or sister out. Even if you can't, even if it's just lending a hand. I loved it.
I didn't ask you beforehand if I could ask about this story, and you can tell me no, but the story you told me about what your church did for the church in South Africa that was attacked by,
a radical
Muslim group.
Yeah. I can go into, I'll go into some of it. So that we partner with a church over in Africa that was attacked here a few months back, not too long ago, and they were subsequently, I think, around 180 people were murdered for their faith and butchered. I'm not going to get too graphic, but the pastor and the rest of the congregation literally were fleeing and just going place to place to place, trying to keep ahead of these groups that are actively killing Christians over there. So we, the church, sent blankets and food and everything. And we actually sent a couple guys, I won't name them because of their job titles and stuff. A lot of the people in our church are special forces, FBI, HRT guys and stuff. And so sent them over there to try to make sure that stuff got delivered to them. Bed rolls and stuff that was easy to get up and go. And it really, the whole time, while this is happening, though, they're still praising God. Still worshiping. And it's really, you know, it's hard thing to grasp because we live in a culture here and in a state where we have the comforts, and we have the luxuries, and we have a lot of this stuff that we take so much for granted. And these people are literally fleeing with no shoes, and for their lives, their children, and stuff. And church was able to send stuff over to help with a church we sponsor and actually rendezvous with them. And, this is what it's about. It's all of this. And you really should be evaluating, you know, and not everybody will, but you really should be evaluating how much you can help other people. With you know, the needs, you know, it doesn't have to be overseas. It doesn't have to be, it's your neighbor down the road, you know, and whatnot. It like I said, it could be just simply lending a hand, you know? That one got to me cause I was mad. I was real mad at first and you know, that, yeah, you know, you want to strap up and ready to go. But it's, you have to look at it as like, you know, people who believers and stuff be persecuted. And in some of these countries, it's unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable. So, in that aspect, I'm grateful that we were able to heed that calling and the church was able to do that. It was really good.
Being able to contribute financially to something when you have an opportunity like that, right?
Yep.
Being able to contribute financially to something that important and that helpful to a group, you know, mm-hmm. that needs it. That's powerful, man. That's a really cool story.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
Well, this has been amazing, Brandon. Yeah. Thank you so much for coming on, sharing your insights, your experience with us. I really appreciate you coming on the show today.
Man, this has been an absolute blast. I appreciate you, man. I appreciate your time. And before long, we'll probably be doing some stuff. And, you know, maybe we should do another one of these in like another year or something there, 6 months, like see where we're at with, you know, how this journey is going. Yeah. Part two.
Yeah.
You know, and for everybody out there that makes it to the end and everything, just, you know, everybody starts somewhere and you just have to make those connections. So if reach out to me and, you know, if Justin, any of the people that I mentioned, like there's so many, I mean, I could sit here and go down a whole list, but, everybody is a giver. And this should be, you have the power in yourself to make this work and, but also give back.
Absolutely. Love it.
Appreciate it, Justin. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thanks, man.
All right, brother.
To our listeners, thank you so much for tuning in. If you enjoyed today's episode, don't forget to like and subscribe to our YouTube channel. We'd love to hear your feedback in the comments below. Also, let us know who you'd like to see as guests on future episodes of Nursing Real Wealth. Join us every other Tuesday for more insightful discussions. Have a great day. God bless.